Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, honestly, anyone I can find who are people that are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And this week, I welcome to the program Jason Hartman. Jason is the founder and CEO of Platinum Properties Investor Network, the Hartman Media Company, and the Jason Hartman Foundation. Starting with very little, Jason, while still in college at the age of 19, embarked on a career in real estate while brokering properties for clients. And he was investing in his own portfolio along the way. Through creativity, persistence, and hard work, he soon joined the ranks of the top 1% of realtors in the U.S. and in quick succession earned a number of prestigious industry awards and became a young multimillionaire. Very, very impressive. Jason has been involved in several thousand real estate transactions and has owned income properties in 11 states and 17 cities. His company, Platinum Properties Investor Network Incorporated, helps people achieve the American dream of financial freedom by purchasing income property in prudent markets nationwide. Excuse me. Jason's complete solution for real estate investors, which is trademarked, is a comprehensive system providing real estate investors with education, research, resources, and technology to deal with all the areas of their income property investment needs. And this is what I really like. Jason also believes that giving back to the community plays an important role in building strong personal relationships. He established the Jason Hartman Foundation in 2005 to provide financial literacy education to young adults, providing the all-important real-world skills that are simply not taught in school and which are the keys to the financial stability and success of future generations. Jason, good morning. Welcome to your Partner in Success. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Good morning, Denise. It's great to be here.
I don't know about you. I had trouble getting in, and it looks like you did too. I had a horrible feeling we were going to have to ditch this thing. I'm so glad you made it.
Oh, of course. Of course. We're here, and we're talking.
We are. Well, listen, before we get too deep into the questions that I have for you, was there anything I missed about you? Is there anything that I missed in the introduction that you would like our audience to know about you?
Well, just that the bio is better than the reality.
No.
I'm kidding.
Oh, come on.
Whenever you hear someone read your bio introducing you for a speech or something, you know, it's like, oh, really? I'm just a normal guy who works hard and tries to apply some creativity in my business and really, Denise, takes advantage of the power of leverage. I think leverage is really the key to success in pretty much any area of life. I mean, you know, certainly business, certainly investing. There are ways that you can leverage your health and longevity. There are ways although I'm not an expert, there are ways that you can leverage your mind and your relationships and your experiences. There are, I think, really, if you boil life down to, you know, one of the fundamental keys to success in any endeavor, it comes back to leverage. Leverage is such a powerful thing. You know, Archimedes said, give me a lever long enough and I will move the entire world. And I think that's so true. Leverage is really one of the big keys.
I agree with you. It's something that I've always been aware of. I'm trying to get better at it. It's one of those things, leverage. And it is the title of our show today, Creating Leverage in Life and Business. But it's one of those things that unless you really are aware of it, and you really work at it, you kind of don't think about it much, and you lose out on so much, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, we have to look for areas in which we can apply leverage, use the right tools and techniques to apply that leverage. And that's how we can create exponential gains in any area.
Well, let's talk a bit about leveraging in your personal life, because without a decent personal life, without happiness, health, you know, a successful personal life, you kind of don't have a successful business life. At least that's my thoughts. I mean, you need to start at home, don't you? You need to start within. So where would you advise people to start leveraging their health and their spirituality or their beliefs or whatever it is that they need to begin really working on? Where would you mm-hmm. have them start?
Yeah, well, great question. I am not the ultimate guru on that area, by the way.
There is no such thing. I'm going to tell you right now, there's no such person.
Yeah, I have a few ideas, though. But you know, my main areas are business and that kind of leverage through systems and branding and publishing and media and so forth, and then the investing and personal finance area. But, you know, in terms of health, I launched a new show recently, Denise, and I've been interviewing people for quite a while and was rather slow to launch this show and just accumulating interviews. It's entitled The Longevity and Biohacking Show. And you and your listeners may be familiar that there's this whole sort of movement out there of what's known as biohacking. And, you know, how can we take our bodies and our minds and kind of hack the system, if you will, hack nature to make them extremely productive. Many years ago, I remember learning about the concept of super learning, and there's a book by that title. And basically what the authors talked about is how that if you play Baroque classical music in the four-quarter time cadence, while you're learning something just in the background, if you're reading, if you're studying, if you're, you know, listening to a podcast or an audio book, if you play that in the background and it simulates the human heart rate of about one beat per second, somehow your mind becomes more receptive and more effective in terms of gaining and retaining that knowledge and assimilating it. So, you know, that's one example of a biohack, if you will, in terms of hacking the mind. There are many interesting things people are doing to hack the body, and this is just kind of a fascinating subject to me, not the least of which is something that probably was founded by the late Norman Cousins, who in the 60s and early 70s was diagnosed with a rare and curable blood disease and told that he only had a short time to live, maybe 6 months or so. And he checked out of the hospital and his prescription was happiness. It was laughter. It was watching, Marx Brothers reruns and laughing. And he found that laughter cured his pain. And it turned out he lived decades longer. He just died maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or something like that. And he wrote a very famous book about it called Anatomy of an Illness. And
right.
And so hacking our physical being, our body, with our psyche, psychosomatic, psyche the mind and soma the body. And so there are many ways to do this. It's very fascinating.
Well, and it's so interesting that you should bring up the music, because I've always done this. I've always listened to Bach and Handel and Vivaldi while I'm working. I always have. It, to me, there's just, and I didn't do it on purpose. It just always worked for me. And then not too long ago, I was listening to an Audible book by a lady named Sonia Choquette. And darned if she didn't mention the same thing that you just said. And then here you are. It's like, okay, now I'm paying attention. There are no accidents. There are no coincidences. But it really does work. I know that when I'm a web developer, as you know, and sometimes that can get very technical. And there's almost always in every build one or two spots where you go, what in the world am I in this business? you know, there's just going to be something that has you, you know, ripping your hair out and stomping around the room. And the minute I put on that kind of music and just calm myself, the answer shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's,
no,
it's,
I have
it's
to
really
say,
quite amazing.
Yeah, I walk away. First, my first step is I walk away. I go outside. I dig a hole. I play with the dog. I watch squirrels. I exercise. I walk away from it. But then I come back in, and I turn on that Baroque music, and all is well in my world.
Yeah, yeah. It's I guess it doesn't work with Tupac Shakur.
No. That's not music,
you know,
but that's a whole other show.
Well, I would happen to agree with you on that one, but yeah, you know, so much of this so-called music is just cacophony. It's, you know, it's
right.
It's really it's not very
it's
musical, but I guess that's all a matter of personal opinion. So I'll shut up on that before I get some hate mail. So
I happen to agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there are other hacks and shortcuts and leverage opportunities where one can accelerate their growth and success, certainly in the area of business. You know, there are things you can do to gain leverage. Internet marketing is a huge way. It's not exactly a secret. Everybody's into it nowadays. But, you know, there are specifics there. Certainly with investing, my favorite vehicle has always been income property, real estate investing, because there's so much leverage, you know, where the bank will finance most of the deal. And, you know, you're only putting in one-fifth of the money, but you can control five times what you can afford to control. So that creates a lot of growth opportunity, and it's all about leverage.
Now, when you say income property, are your favorite single dwellings, single family dwellings, or apartment buildings or office buildings? I ask this for a specific reason. It's kind of a personal reason, but for a long time when I was younger, I had investment properties of both types. And I have to tell you, the headache associated with that was what drove me out of it.
Right, right. Well, you know, good point. You've got to have systems. It's far
right.
from perfect. And it reminds me of the Winston Churchill saying, I think it was Winston Churchill, democracy is a terrible system. It's just better than all the other systems, you know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just a game of comparison. I mean, certainly income property isn't perfect. Nothing is. But it's just better than everything else, at least in my humble opinion. And one of my rules in what I call, I have this 10 commandments of successful investing. And one of them is, thou shalt only invest where there is universal need. And, you know, if you think about it, with the different types of real estate out there, you know, they can outsource the call centers and a lot of administrative jobs to India and the Philippines. And that lessens the need for office space in the United States. They can outsource the manufacturing to China. China's known as the workshop of the world, right? And that lessens the need for industrial properties in the United States. They can outsource retail shopping to the internet. I mean, we all use Amazon.com and other online retailers, and they're so convenient, and the selection is so much better, and the prices are better, and you know, many times you don't have to even pay sales tax, so that's fantastic. And that lessens the need for shopping centers and shopping malls. And so the one thing, though, at the end of the day, everybody needs is a place to live. In fact,
a home, right.
Yeah, the three human needs. It's right on Maslow's hierarchy: food, clothing, and shelter. You know, I mean, he didn't say it exactly that way, but that's essentially what he meant: safety and security. Okay, and basic needs: food, clothing, shelter. And I say, let people rent that shelter from you. You know, provide a service to people by providing rental property inventory. So I like housing. Mostly my favorite, single-family homes. They're just tried and true. They're simple. They're understandable. And they appreciate very well. And they have, you know, if you buy them in the right market, they have excellent cash flow. If you buy them in the wrong market, they have terrible cash flow. So, you know, I don't recommend markets like California or New York or any expensive markets out of Florida. That just doesn't work, okay? But apartments are good too. You know, I own both, and I think they're fine. Apartments are certainly more complicated, no doubt. So you know, just for the typical investor, you know, get yourself a dozen or a couple dozen single family homes and go from there.
No, when you say, and I agree with you, I have family in California, and I, for the life of me, can't understand, number one, why they live there, number two, how they can afford to live there. I just
I love
get it.
I lived virtually all my life in California, and I think it's one of the most overrated places in the universe. But
I love to
visit. I used to like it, not as much, though.
I visit, but boy, I'll tell you what, the minute I shake my... the dust off that San Francisco airport, I'm breathing better. It's like, oh, gotta go.
Yeah.
It's just, I can't stay there for very long.
Place to visit, but it's a very expensive and kind of overrated place to actually live, I think.
I agree. Okay, so when you say, you know, other markets, and then we'll move on to another topic, I'm just curious about it.
Sure.
Just as a for instance, I live in Southwest Louisiana. I'm basically between Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. And you would have thought that after Hurricane Katrina that our property values would just, because this was right about the time everything was tanking. And I had bought my house. I bought my house the week after Hurricane Katrina, and I bought it the day that it went on the market because I had to. You know, I had been in the market for a while. I was living in a rental home, which I had not done for many, many years. But I had sold my other home, and I was in this rental home, which I was not happy about. And this house came on the market. I literally bought it over the internet. But the reason I had to buy that day was because of Hurricane Katrina. People were coming from New Orleans and from Mississippi. Companies were snapping up every available house that they could for their employees. It was missed. So, of course, everybody, you know, the wisdom was, oh, your house is going to depreciate. You bought it the wrong time. I never took a hit ever. And my house continues to appreciate. So you know, when you tell people to look for places, I'm not saying go into Hurricane Alley. Don't do that. But the food is good, but you don't want to live between hurricanes. But the thing is, where would you tell people just off the top of your head to go to, you know, maybe the South where the cost of living is?
Yeah, great question.
You know, kind of so, controllable. I mean, where would you send people?
The second largest demographic cohort in American history that used to be the largest is the baby boomers, about 76 million people. And millions and millions and millions of them are hitting retirement age, and they're moving to warmer climates, generally speaking, places with low cost of living,
Florida,
recreational
Texas.
Opportunities. So we like it, absolutely. You know, we like, we're area agnostic in my investment company, so we go where the deals make sense. We're not committed to any one area. We're area agnostic. So right now, for example, we like Little Rock, Arkansas very well. We like Memphis, Tennessee. We like Atlanta, Georgia. Houston, we're not recommending as highly due to what's going on with oil, although we've done very well in Houston. Over the years. Indianapolis, that's sort of the one exception in the more northern area that seems to have just been a perennial favorite. Kansas City, a little more north, another kind of exception. And Birmingham, Alabama is very good. And you know, we have other markets too. Florida, you know, we've done a lot of business in Florida over the years, but, you know, Florida gets a little expensive and a little frothy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one of these places that's like a low price version of California, you know, and you got to be a little careful in Florida. It's spotty.
You know, I'm 5 hours from almost any place in Florida. It's not my favorite state. I don't know why. Everybody says, "Oh, Florida," and I'm like, "No." And Mississippi, I like. In Alabama, I like. And Florida, I don't know. It never appealed to me. But that's just a personal thing.
Absolutely.
Okay,
so that's the leverage on the personal finance side. You know, we were talking about leverage, right? So income property is the most leverage-favored asset in America. It's the most historically proven asset in America, and it's the most tax-favored asset in America. So leverage, leverage, leverage. Love income property. My favorite investment, bar none. And if you want to switch gears and talk a little bit about business leverage, I'm happy to discuss that or take it away.
Yeah.
You know?
I would like to just cover the whole gamut because to me, like I said earlier, it kind of starts with your own, in your own home, with your physical and your personal health and mental well-being, because that affects everything that you do outside of the home. So that's why I wanted to start there. And then you go into business, and then you can go in, you know, to investing. I mean, it's all part and parcel of what it is that we do every day to survive, and not just survive, but to thrive. So this is your show. You talk about anything you want to. I'm fascinated with all of it.
Well, in my business, there were a few things. I was in the traditional real estate business for many years. I bought a failing real estate company in Southern California, where I lived at the time and most of my life. And I bought it. I turned it around. I sold it to Coldwell Banker in 2005. And when I was doing that deal with Coldwell Banker, I knew I would have a big check and a big capital gain, and I'd need to invest that money. And I looked around and I thought, you know, I've always invested in the very speculative roller coaster Southern California market. And I thought, you know, with what I went through in the 90s, where that market just went down the tubes for 7 years, I don't want to do that again. It's just too risky. And I was older, more conservative, and just a lot more careful. I think we all get that way as we, get a little more wisdom, maybe a couple
hope.
Of gray hairs. Yeah, absolutely. And so I thought, you know, why isn't there I love income property. It's my favorite asset class. It's the most historically proven asset class. And why isn't there a place where I can go and just deploy a large sum of money into multiple markets around the country? And so this is a business talk, not an investing talk, this segment, okay? And so I know there's an old saying in real estate that all real estate is local. You know, there's no such thing as a national housing market in the U.S. There's just about 400 local markets, and they all act very differently, as we alluded to when we were discussing it a moment ago. And so, I went to all the typical financial services places, and, you know, I just don't like Wall Street. I call Wall Street the modern version of organized crime. It's just ridiculous. There's like a scandal every day, if not more than one scandal.
Oh, I agree with you.
You know, I don't invest in
stocks. I never have, to be honest. And most of it is a trust issue. I just don't trust them. I don't trust the government.
Oh.
I don't trust them. Yeah. I don't trust
you're,
any of
you're,
them.
You're right. They don't deserve your trust.
No.
You know, one of my 10 commandments of successful investing is thou shalt maintain control. Okay. And you know, when you relinquish control of your money and you put it in somebody else's hands in some sort of pooled money investment, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, all of that typical junk, okay, it just doesn't work. It works for insiders. It just doesn't work for the rest of us. Okay. And so when you do that, you leave yourself susceptible to three major problems. The first one is you might be investing with a crook, and there's no shortage of crooks on Wall Street. The second problem is you might be investing with an idiot, and you'll lose your money either because of their dishonesty or their incompetence.
Those are interchangeable terms, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I don't know. And some crooks are pretty smart. Okay. The third problem, assume they're honest, assume they're confident. The third problem is they take a huge management fee off the top for managing the deal. I mean, it's just absurd. You know,
and then you have the IRS in your pocket, you know, getting whatever you manage to keep out of it. They're going to steal from you.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I wanted to invest my money and from the sale of the company. And I went around to, you know, Charles Schwab, Merrill Lynch, Ameriprise, all the usual suspects. And they kept printing out these beautiful reports with colored pie charts, modern portfolio theory, overcomplicating everything. You know, you got to have some small caps, some large caps, some international, some bonds, you know, this fund, that fund. It's just junk. I mean, they're all saying the same thing. None of it appealed to me. So I thought, I have got to, you know, do my favorite investment. I've got to buy real estate. I want to do it nationwide this time. I want to diversify geographically. There's nobody to help me do this. So I basically created a company that does that. Okay. And when I talk about leverage and how your listeners can get leverage in their business, I think the first way is to look at the landscape, the competitive landscape in whatever industry one happens to find themselves and have an interest and a passion for, and see if you can tweak it slightly so that you're not competing with everybody else. Because the worst thing that you can have in any business, the least leverageable point, is to be considered a commodity. And that is the worst thing of any business, is to be in a commodity business where you only compete on price. That's the beginning of the end. You don't want to compete on price. So if you look at the tech industry and all of the computer companies out there, there's the most successful company on planet Earth, the most successful company the human race has ever known, doesn't compete on price, because they took the industry and they made a slight difference to it. And it's, of course, I'm talking about Apple Computer, right? Apple Computer.
I knew it was Apple, but I figured it was Apple, and I kept going, you know, no, it can't be Windows, and that's got to be Apple. And I was having this internal argument with myself, so I'm glad you clarified that.
Go to the websites of Dell Computer, which, you know, in its own right is a successful company, which had a, you know, think about it. In the heyday of Dell Computer, they had a unique twist on the business, the production and the customization opportunity, right? But overall, I don't like Dell Computer's products.
No, I had to buy one, and I'm seriously mad at myself.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. And go to Dell Computer, go to Toshiba, go to their websites, and then go to Apple, and look at how much more simple and streamlined and uncomplicated the process is of purchasing a computer. Look at how they just made it easy. They make a high-quality product. They differentiate themselves. People who buy Apple are cult members, myself included. You know, I mean, it's amazing that this company can get people to have heated debates and arguments with other people who don't use their products, and they don't pay them to. And the people who are the pro-Apple people are paying probably three times more than the so-called competitive product, okay, with the same basic specs, okay?
That's so true. I looked at an iPhone 6 the other day. My iPhone 5 is only 2 years old. I don't need another phone. But I thought, let me go see. Am I going to pay $700 for a phone when my old one, my 2-year-old phone, is perfectly fine? No, but people do.
Yeah.
People do. And I'm like, are you people nuts? I mean, $600, $700, and $800 for a phone. It happens, I don't know how many hundreds of times a day.
And people buy. The difference is that they've got differentiation. So the first key to leverage is differentiation, which is the opposite of commoditization. That's that difference. And then the other part where we can really leverage our businesses is systemization. So we must systematize whatever we can. Look at all the processes in your business and figure out a way that you can systematize them so that everything has a flow and a workflow to it. Very important point. And I won't belabor the point. I'm just saying you need to do it.
Because that's in my industries, virtual assistants industry and the web development industry, I preach exactly what you're saying all the time. And people are so resistant to it, and I am darned if I understand the psychology behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't they want to get systems in place?
Well, we certainly both agree on that. The reason, every business is different. So in the sense of systems, you know, it has to become very specific in terms of one business versus another and what kind of systems they need.
Right.
I will suffice to say, though, if you look at, I had Michael Gerber on my podcast a while back, and, you know, he's the author of the E-Myth series of books.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole basic thing is work on the business, not in the business. So we all start out working in our business, But ultimately, the goal is to get to the point where we work on our business. And we create systems, and then we manage the systems rather than managing the business itself. Okay, so it's a kind of a stepping back and looking at that. But back to the first one, when I talked a little bit about commoditization versus differentiation, we must differentiate or we will die. And part of that also, and we talked about Apple, of course, is the brand component. So the branding of your company and your business is a very key leverageable aspect, because you've got to be known for something. What are you known for? If you look at my business and you look at the real estate industry, which is you know, my most successful part, one of my businesses is my real estate investment company. Of course, there's a zillion people in real estate. I mean, maybe more than a zillion, 2 zillion, not an exact number. And they're not differentiated. It's a commoditization business. The public doesn't get the difference between one real estate person or one real estate company and another. I mean, seriously, what is really the difference between Coldwell Banker and Prudential or Coldwell Banker and Century 21?
My guess is nothing much. Just the people.
Yeah, nothing much. Yeah, nothing much. You know?
Yeah.
And what is the difference between John Doe and Jane Doe Realtor? Not much. You know, I mean, certainly there are good and bad realtors, but can you tell which one's which? No, you can't, because they don't specialize enough. Okay, so in my
business,
you know, we only deal with investors. That's all we do. We are specialists at nationwide investing. Our slogan is the complete solution for real estate investors. And that's what we do. We've taken all these little disparate parts that are difficult to put together and that annoy people because they've got to coordinate all this stuff, and we just make it much easier for the client. So we've got a true differentiation, and we have almost no competition. So that's a key point. The last part we're probably going to have time for is to talk about leverage in terms of publishing. So what you're doing in your business is very smart, because instead of being in the virtual assistant business and the web design business, you're using your show to leverage that and become a thought leader. So thought leadership is a key part of that differentiation and that leverage. That's a very scalable, leverageable, differentiatable, if that's a word, concept, is to be in the thought leadership role rather than just another person providing that service.
Oh, I agree. And doesn't that take us also into the branding world? I mean, you have to brand yourself at some point if you're going to be known for anything. So how do you brand a business basically to where, you know, people, they see what you're up to and they instantly understand that you're there to be a resource for them. You know, you're there to help them. You're not just going, give me the money, give me the money. You're actually there to help them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it all ties together. So the system, the thought leadership, the scalability, it's all part of the brand. Okay, and there are many, many aspects to it. So certainly it all ties together, no question about it.
Well, I love what you're saying about don't be a commodity, because in one of my industries in particular, the virtual assistants industry, it's pretty much people will just say, oh, well, I can't raise my rates because everybody else is charging, let's just pick $35 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I am considerably more than that, but you know what? I'm worth it, and I'm able to explain to my clients what my value proposition to them is. So I never worry about what other people's prices are, but unfortunately, it's a big, big mindset in my industry. People just get themselves locked into this little fee structure that doesn't do them a darn bit of good. It really doesn't actually even help their clients, if I could just make them understand that.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but I love that, you know, that we're not supposed to be commodities. If I've listened to anything you've had to say, and I've listened to everything, that's the one thing that really is sticking in my head.
don't compete, create.
Right.
So be known for something, have a niche, and be willing to turn people off, be willing to turn business away, and you will,
yep.
And just have the faith that you will gain more by specializing. If you think of all of the great businesses out there, people, when they have a real problem or a real challenge in their lives, they come to the specialist. They don't come to the generalist.
Right.
And the specialist can charge a lot more. There's an old story that's kind of funny. I heard from Earl Nightingale many years ago, and it was about, it's like industrial era. A machine broke in this factory, and the entire assembly line went down because this one machine wasn't working. Nobody there could figure out how to fix it. And so they called in an expert. And the expert comes in, takes a look, and pulls out a hammer and taps the machine in a certain spot three times with a hammer, and says, "That'll be $10,000. That's my charge for this." And and the supervisor, the foreman in the factory, says, $10,000? You must be kidding. Send me an itemized invoice." And so the next day, the itemized invoice comes, and it says, "Tapping with a hammer, $100. Knowing where to tap, $9,990.
Right. Right.
$9,900, right? And so, that specialization is very, very lucrative. When you specialize and you're willing to let go of business you think you're losing, and I say that quite specifically that way, because you're not really losing it. When you specialize, you attract the people that really need your product or service.
And they're going to pay for it because they understand the value.
They'll pay a premium.
I know. I tell people all the time, don't scattershot. Quit, settle on something and be absolutely excellent at that. But Jason, I've got to tell you, I started chuckling. I had to put you on mute so I could laugh. When you're talking about Earl Nightingale, last
mm-hmm.
night when I went to sleep, well, when I tried to go to sleep, it's not something I do easily, but I always set my intentions for what I'm going to think about or dream about when I'm asleep, because I'm a very active dreamer. So I set my intention last night that I wanted to have an advisory board, kind of like Napoleon Hill did back in the day.
Right.
Earl Nightingale was on my advisory board. Did I dream about him? No, I dreamed about kittens, but I'm going to do it again tonight.
That's fantastic. I love it.
But it's so funny that you say that. And I was like, but I was just talking to him last night.
So,
there are no accidents. There really aren't. Okay,
yeah,
so
good.
We've talked about leverage, and we're talking about, and I'm in total agreement with you that you should not just kind of put yourself out there as a generalist. You'll do fine, but you will never be spectacular. You will never be the person that people go to and go, "I need your help." So what other advice do you have for people who are probably making these mistakes and not even realizing it?
Okay, so maybe I'll close with this bit of advice. And this one's going to sound kind of strange to people, but I want you to consider the branding part of this equation, and consider some of the celebrities that you're familiar with. And this is called the law of polarization. And we talked about how one should specialize and be willing to lose business. But to take that a step further, if you're in the world of media and branding, and really we all need to be in that world nowadays, the law
Absolutely.
Of polarization, the law of polarization would tell us, if you're a thought leader, anything in that category, really, they're all the same. Okay, the law of polarization would tell us that we need to consider intentionally, and I kid you not, intentionally turning people off. Because a powerful brand, remember that brand, even if it's a personal brand or a product brand, a powerful brand will polarize. it will turn people off. It will repel and repulse people as much as it will attract people. You've got to be, stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. And if you look at, let's look at, for example, the talk radio landscape, okay? On talk radio, there are
mm-hmm.
and Howard Stern, okay? Those were the two mm-hmm. I was going to mention, Rush Limbaugh and Howard Stern. So
I listen to Rush every day.
Yeah, these two talk show hosts are, you know, the most successful radio talk show hosts the human race has ever known. And they are willing to take a position. People want to follow somebody who takes a position. And half of the country probably hates them both, but the other half loves
right.
them. Okay.
Right.
And there's another example. And we used to advertise on talk radio extensively, and we were endorsed by many famous talk radio hosts. And there's a great one that I really like in Los Angeles, and his name is Dennis Prager. And he's got some great books, and I've met him a few times. And he would endorse us on KRLA when he was on, I think he's still on that station, but haven't followed him lately. And Dennis Prager is probably the most sort of intellectual and reasonable person on the radio. He really is a balanced, great thinker. I enjoy his work a lot. But he's not as popular as the others. And I would submit that the reason he's not as popular is because he doesn't exploit, and I literally, quite literally mean, the concept of polarization. He's balanced and reasonable, and that's good.
Well, I found William Buckley to be that way, very balanced and very reasonable, almost to the point of being asleep sometimes.
Bill Buckley. Yeah, Bill Buckley, he was a very intellectual guy, too. Yeah,
right.
Good point. Good comparison, yeah. So if you want to be, you've got to be known for something. That's the point
you
of what
do.
We're saying here. Be known for something.
Well, I'll tell you, in social media, since we're also talking about social media and branding, a figure like that who probably is not as well known, well, he's not as well known as either of those two men that we spoke of, but that's Larry Wingate. Follow
mm-hmm.
him. You know
yeah.
who Larry Wingate is?
I
mean,
he's
written six.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a fascinating guy. He calls himself the world's first irritational speaker, and he means it. With Larry.
Irritational.
Yep. And he do not
Love
call
that.
Him a motivational speaker. He will jump right down your throat. but he's a very powerful voice, and I'll tell you what, he will tell you which way the corn grows, and you can like it or lump it. He really does not care. And follow him on Facebook if you have a chance, Larry Wingate. And I'll tell you what, he has got an enormous following, and the conversations that get started on his, it's still called a fan page, are just fascinating to watch because people either love him or they loathe him. And, you know,
right.
his attitude is you're welcome to loathe him as long as you're having a conversation and you're opening your mind. Now, if you get personal
yeah.
and attack him, he'll block you. But it's fascinating to watch because he starts these great conversations that actually get people thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that what
yeah.
it's all about?
It is. That's exactly what it's about.
Right.
That's
so
a fantastic point.
I'm sorry, say it again?
That is what it's about, and that's a fantastic point.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, and we'll go back a little bit to what you're saying about, you know, people worried about possibly losing business. I don't know if it's just a common sense thing for me or if it's just me being, as my mother has always put it, bloody-minded, but I have never taken clients just for the sake of taking clients. Number one, I have to like them because I know I'll be working for them for a long time or with them for a long time. And number two, I have to really believe in what they're doing because I cannot spin anything. It's just not in my nature.
Mm-hmm.
So I've turned away a lot of business, but it's, you know, it's never hurt me. Never has.
Yeah. Good point. No, you've got to be willing, but sometimes it does hurt you in the short run. You've got to take a step back to take two steps forward, right? I mean, you do agree that at the moment of choice when you turn that business down,
right.
you have the thought or the concern or the scarcity feeling that, gosh, you know, this client's willing to pay me now. I'm just turning away money. Isn't that stupid?
Right.
But not necessarily. It can be very good.
You know, I have that conversation, and I always just walk away from it perfectly fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It must be that bloody-minded thing. I don't know where it comes from.
Right, right.
Okay, so Jason, you mentioned you have a podcast. Don't you have a couple of them, or do you just have the one?
Well, actually, I have 19 of them.
Holy cow.
I
only found two.
Yeah. If any of your listeners go to iTunes and just type my name, Jason Hartman, in the iTunes store or at Stitcher Radio, they'll find all of the shows. So my main show is called The Creating Wealth Show. That's the one I started many years ago. And that's all about real estate investing, economics, personal finance, all of that good stuff. And that's the most popular. We're at, I think, 456 episodes, or 466, I can't remember, something like that, almost 500 episodes for that one. And then I've got a bunch of other shows, too. I've got a survival show called The Holistic Survival Show, which is, we cover some health topics, some preparedness topics, disaster planning, government and libertarian type issues. And, we just had the author of Three Felonies a Day on the show, which was very interesting. He's a lawyer who talks about how the government, uses all these ridiculous number of laws we have that nobody even knows, these mysterious laws that we don't even know we're disobeying every day. And, we're all doing it, basically.
Oh, wow.
How the government can just use those at any time to target you. And that show is really interesting. I have a travel show called The Jet Setter Show that talks about travel destinations, living overseas, investing overseas, offshore asset protection strategies. That's pretty fascinating. I have the longevity and biohacking show that I just mentioned. And a bunch of others. I have a show called the American Monetary Association Show. And, I just really find it fascinating. Some of these shows have really no commercial purpose. they're just personal interest. And I like to talk to all of thought leaders in these various fields and hear what they think and learn from them, and then take that knowledge to my listeners on all my other shows. So just search Jason Hartman in the iTunes store, and you'll find them, or go to hartmanmedia.com, and they're all there.
You mentioned several that I must listen to. I'm aware of two of them, but I'm definitely going to go look at the travel, the Jet Setter. What do you think about investing in Belize? I've been looking at Belize a lot.
Well,
haven't made the leap
yet. Yeah, so I've been to Belize twice, and I also interviewed John McAfee, the software security former billionaire, actually, on my show. And he lived in Belize for a while, and I am not a fan of Belize. I have to tell you, I think it is a real third world place. I'm not impressed at all.
I haven't been there, but I have a lot of clients that are there.
A lot of people differ with me. And look, it's a personal decision part of it.
Right.
Okay? I like modernity. Okay. I mean, humankind has worked to get to this point for millennia. We're here. We've got all these modern conveniences and things.
Mm-hmm.
And, going to Belize is like living in a third world country with unreliable, slow internet, with lots of pollution, lots of crime. I am not.
I couldn't live like that.
I have to tell you. But, if you want to go snorkeling, it's beautiful.
No, don't snorkel.
I'm just not into the idea of laying on the beach and being disconnected
right.
from the world.
I'm not either. But, there's so many, buy Belize, and I keep getting kind of sucked into that. Maybe I ought to look at that.
I'll talk to you about the real estate side for just a moment. So I've been.
Well, that's really what I'm interested in, because I was thinking about buying, possibly investment property over there, and I would love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, thanks. So I've been to 74 countries, and some I've been to many times, and I have looked and looked for international investments left and right. And believe me, if if I could find international property investments that made sense, I would be recommending them, just like I'm recommending, you know, Memphis and Atlanta and Dallas and Indianapolis and Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, just like I'm recommending all of these markets, I would recommend Belize. I mean, you know, we can do that. We're area agnostic, I like to say. People have to realize is, number one, real estate, since the Great Depression in the United States, has always been subsidized by the government, because we have this secondary mortgage market, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and those are totally dysfunctional industries, or entities, I should say, mm-hmm. and you know, they suck up the taxpayer money, they're terribly managed. However, on the flip side of them, as a real estate investor, you're basically getting a government subsidy. So you should take the subsidy. I mean, it's just like, you know, Obamacare will probably be a disaster, too. I mean, that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. But I think it'll be a disaster.
I don't think you're wrong.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you.
So Fannie Mae is a disaster. But, heck, it's a subsidy. It's a free handout. Take it. It's like Obamacare for real estate investors. So, you know, this market in the U.S. is pretty special. Do you know there are only two countries on planet Earth where you can get a 30-year mortgage? I mean, we have a very unique thing. And the other thing about the U.S. is that we have a massive amount of infrastructure. Property valuation here is very understandable. We have the multiple listing service, which is a U.S. thing. Okay, we have Zillow and Trulia, and all of the records for property transactions are public in the U.S. And so you can understand what the value of something is here. In all of these other countries, the value is so unrefined. No, you don't know what anything's worth. I mean, when I took a five-country tour of Eastern Europe a few years ago and looked at real estate extensively in all of these markets, thinking we would start recommending that people invest in Romania, Bulgaria, Latvia, and it's just a total hit-and-miss thing. You really, there's just no infrastructure in these places. In Australia, it's the same way. You don't know what anything's worth. And
how about New Zealand?
Oh,
New Zealand, same way?
I
mean, I'll be darned.
New Zealand is beautiful. I love New Zealand. Okay?
Yes, that's one of the countries that's on my bucket list, no question.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful place. When I was in New Zealand with my girlfriend at the time years ago, I told her, I said, you know what I've realized visiting here? That I'm a closet tree hugger. Because it's so beautiful and the trees were so gorgeous. And, you know, it's great, but to invest, no way. A lot of these countries, they don't have advertising platforms and rental markets that are mature, and it's just not the same. The U.S. is so far ahead. Yeah, of even Western Europe is that way. It's just the properties in the United States are less expensive, and the services for those properties to construct them and maintain them and sell them and rent them are so much more developed, and the banking industry here is so much more developed. Nothing holds a candle to the U.S. that I have found. 74 countries
right.
So far.
Wow.
I just can't find anything else that works. Belize twice. No way for me.
No.
Listen
way.
To my interview with Don McAfee about Belize. And
I absolutely will. I'm
World
going
show,
to go look for it.
And, yeah, you will not want to be investing in Belize if you hear what John McAfee has to say. He lived there for a while, and he does not have good things to say. Okay?
Well, you know, and it's so funny because every once in a while, I don't know about you, I love the way England looks. The UK to me is just gorgeous. And, you know, I'll get involved in watching these little programs, you know, English murder mysteries. I really hate American TV. I think so much of it is just garbage, and I watch very little of it, but what I do watch is almost always from the UK. And you look at these beautiful cottages and they're trellis-covered and rose-covered. You say, oh, I would love to live there, until they open the door and you're like, oh, hell no. They're squat. The ceilings are down, you know, I mean, you have to duck to get into a door. It's like, oh, my God. When you say, you know, modern, I have to have modern. I need my internet. I want my water running hot and cold, and I want it hard, fast water. You know, I don't want it to trickle out and me going, sooner or later, the tub's going to get full. I'm very spoiled. And I know
that. The other thing you've got to realize about England is it's cold.
I like cold. To me, it's gorgeous until you open a door and then you're like, no, I don't think so. we went off on a little travel rant here. So is there, let's see how many, we've got about, five more minutes, and it has been fascinating chatting with you. So is there anything else that you want people to know about what it is that you do or how you can assist them or help them in any way?
Well, I would just say get leverage on your life any way you can. Get leverage on your health and your longevity. Get leverage on your personal finances. Of course, as you well know by now, my favorite investment for that is income property. My second favorite is hard money or private lending and notes and land contracts and things like that. Not quite as good as the actual property, but it's a good second choice. And then get leverage on your business in all the ways we discussed. I think that's very important. And my website for my real estate investment company, I didn't mention, that's jasonhartman.com. And then the website for my media company is hartmanmedia.com. So your listeners can get pretty much everything for free except actual properties at those websites.
And listen, our audience, just so you know, they're hyperlinked in the show notes, so you can easily get to his websites. Jason, I can tell just by listening to you that you're a voracious reader. Do you mind sharing some of your favorite authors or favorite books at this time?
Oh, gosh, that's like asking a parent to say, who's your favorite child?
I love
books. I know. There's so much great knowledge out there. Gosh, one of my all-time favorites would be an old book that may well be out of print, but you can get a hold of it. Just look for it. Earl Nightingale's book, Earl Nightingale's Greatest Discovery, just a fantastic book. Of course, I'm a huge fan of the late Stephen Covey and the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. In the world of branding, because we talked about branding, I just interviewed Patrick Hanlon on my show, who wrote the book Primal Branding, which is excellent. There are just so many great books out there. You know, it's an endless thing. And by the way, if you move to Belize, Amazon.com won't deliver there, I don't think. So good luck with that one.
I'm done. Belize is officially off of my list. I'm such an introvert that I always tell people, look, I'm not shy. I'm just an introvert. I need to be alone. I require a lot of alone time. And I've always said that the minute, I live in the deep south, and we eat a lot of fresh, you know, seafood and fish and crawfish and oysters. And I've always said the minute that Amazon can deliver, you know, a 20-pound sack of crawfish to my door along with a head of lettuce, I'm selling my car. It's over.
Yes.
I'm not coming back out.
That's great. Hey, I got one more great book for you. And this one is by, it's called The Future of the Mind by Michio Kaku. And, you know, that's hard to, I have not had him on any of my shows yet, but I want to get him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just spell his name, Michio, and last name, Kaku, The Future of the Mind. That was fascinating. You would love it.
I'm going to grab that. Hey, have you ever spoken with Lon Safko? Do you know who he is?
Nope.
Lon Safko wrote The Social Media Bible. He is a fascinating guy, and I can introduce you. I think he would be a tremendous gift for you. But he has founded over 14 companies. He created the first talking computer that actually saved a man's life. He's got something like 3,300 documents in the Smithsonian. He's a fascinating guy. He's a very nice man. I think he would be a fantastic guest for you.
Yeah, I'm just looking him up now, and I will get him, I'll ask my guest bookers to book him on my show. So great.
Well, thank you. I can introduce you. I can just, you know, send you both a quick introduction. He's fascinating. I think you would really enjoy talking with him.
Yeah, let's do that. Thank you.
Yeah. In fact, he's got such a great mind. You know, I always call my guests after the show is over, and he's just a delightful, delightful man. And I called him. I said, listen, I know you're happily married, and I would never get married again. I've been married, didn't like it, would rather be hit by a beer truck than do it again. But if your wife ever leaves you, you call me. He just started laughing.
That's funny.
I mean, his mind is just, it's like yours, it's just fascinating. So I have really, really appreciated talking with you today, and I'm so glad that you were able to make it.
Well, likewise. Thanks for doing what you do, and I hope this helps your listeners.
Oh, I'm positive it will. You know, I will go ahead and put this out on social media with some other links. And if you ever need gas, call me, because I've got a ton of them. I've been doing this since 2009. So if you need any ideas, I can sure help you with that.
Thank you so much.
Well, listen, Jason, thank you again. You've given our audience a glimpse into your life and your systems and the advice, and I know they appreciate it just as much as I do, and everybody who is listening or who will be listening. The show is available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Jason Hartman, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.